J8, number 1B.
All right, so we see then that Mrs. Eddy in Science and Health talks about this issue, and I just bring out a few points here. In relationship, first of all, she talks about this question of what is reality, which we will see as we go on, has to do with this question, what is the science of being? And how do I become one with reality, really? What is the structure of my consciousness, and how does that structure of consciousness become one with that science of being? She says something interesting in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, the textbook that Mrs. Eddy wrote. On page 423, she says, both science and consciousness are now at work in the economy of being, according to the law of mind, which ultimately asserts its absolute supremacy. Nowhere does she say that science, what is reality, and consciousness, how do I become one with reality, is now at work according to your own personal standpoint, into how you look at the world, or how the human mind looks at the world. She says that science and consciousness are now at work in the economy of being according to the law of mind. Takes it totally out of the personal and puts it back into God's realm, the law of mind. And that mind she has capitalized, meaning God. In Science and Health, you'll see that, as we'll see, that the whole divine system of reference, which refers to God, is capitalized. Whenever she refers to God itself, she capitalizes the terms. So here she says it's according to the law of capital mind, which ultimately asserts its absolute supremacy, that the law of mind is at work, bringing out what it wants to bring out, not what we want to bring out. Then, as one goes on, in another quote, she says in Science and Health on page 112, she says, from the infinite one in Christian Science comes one principle, which is capitalized, and its infinite idea. And with this infinitude come spiritual rules, laws, and their demonstration. She doesn't say an our demonstration, how we want to demonstrate our life, how we want the world to work. But she says comes rules and laws and their demonstration, the rules and laws of the Infinite One principle itself. They're demonstrating what they want to demonstrate. And then in Miscellaneous Writings on page 353, she says, on everyday situations, she would say, some people try to tend folks as if they should steer the regulator of mankind. She says, God makes us pay for tending the action he adjusts. So we begin to get that sense, really, that there is a self-operating, self-regulating, error-preventing, error-correcting mechanism going on within being. Call it divine cybernetics if you want. Cybernetics just being that world term which is used for automatic control systems. Control systems that operate by themselves. But what she was showing us here is that God operates by itself as a divinely cybernetic system. It doesn't need our help. It's bringing out what it wants to bring out in our life. She goes on to show this in what we call the textbook, always referring back to Science and Health. When in the apocalypse, at the very end of the textbook on page 578 in Science and Health, she gives her spiritual interpretation for the 23rd Psalm. And when we learn the divine system of reference and hear the system of reference behind the textbook, which was the pioneering work of John W. Dorley, a longtime Christian scientist. He was a prominent member of the Christian Science Church, and then also the work of his student Max Kapler, bringing out then the structure of the Bible and the structure of the Christian Science textbook by listening to the divine system of reference. Really, those capitalized terms that stand for God, as I go on, I'll bring this out more and more. But just to get the overall spirit of it, she wants to show that who or what is governing. And in the 16th chapter called The Apocalypse in the textbook, you hear the accentuation of the Christian Science level with its accentuation on love, where it really is bringing out the tonality of the incorporeal or spiritual sense of deity demonstrates love's perfection in human experience. And that's love with a capital L referring to God, which includes human love. But love, God, is something bigger and grander than just a human emotion. Love is a realm of God good. So we see then that what Mrs. Eddy wants to show here with this 23rd Psalm is, as I just mentioned, that it is showing how love's perfection, oh yes, I was talking about love, and how love isn't just a human quality, but it's a realm of God good. Love stands for that realm of perfection, that realm of that all-embracing plan of good that is within the realm of God, that is being brought out in our lives, a plan that God knows about our lives, and a plan which we don't always know the direction that principle God wants to bring out. That's what this term love stands for. So in looking at the 23rd Psalm, and I will talk about the divine system of reference to get us used to it, but we will pick it up in more detail as we go on. Under the tone of love as mind, she says, divine love is my shepherd, I shall not want. We hear here that therefore love as mind is guiding and leading us. Therefore, if we can take that attitude of who or what governs, we would see that it's divine love is governing me. And take the attitude as, I shall not always want this and want that and want this and hope I can get this and that, which just makes us frustrated. But to calm ourselves down and not always want, and sometimes we get what we want, most of the times we don't. We always, within the plan of reality, get what we need, and we don't get what we don't need. But divine love brings us what we need, it guides and leads, and takes that relative standpoint of, I shall not want. And love as spirit, love maketh me, it causes me to lie down in green pastures. Love leadeth me beside the still waters. It's love governing my life, and I let it happen. Love is soul, and love is always restoring my soul, my spiritual sense. Soul is that synonymous term which refers to resurrection, to restore, to bring back to the original. Love will always bring my identity, my soul, back to its original spiritual standpoint if I get myself out of the way and let it happen. Love is principle, shows that love leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake, not for my name's sake. Love is principle demonstrates itself. Love is life. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for love is with me. Love's rod and love's staff, They comfort me. Therefore, love leads me into deathless life. Love is truth. Love prepareth a table for me in the presence of mine enemies. Love anointeth my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Love is truth. Truth is that Lama's terms, it stands for consciousness. Love anointeth my head, my consciousness, with the oil of inspiration. My cup runneth over with from the inspiration of love is truth coming to me. If I let it happen and don't get in the way. Love is love. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house or the consciousness of love forever. That love, God is love, will bestow upon me infinite good if I cease the warfare. Mrs. Eddy said that she did her greatest spiritual work when she got herself out of the way. And we know how the days of creation always say, let there be, let it happen. Get yourself out of the way and have that attitude of humility as Jesus had. It's not my will, but thine be done. And let that goal, that spiritual goal, be brought out in spiritual work. One learns how to take on the scientific method on how to get oneself out of the way. It's not always that easy. Now, when we consider this question of who or what is governing our life, who or what is solving the problems, who or what is giving us the answers to these problems. In Max Kepler's book, in the introduction to the science of Christian Science, especially on pages 13 to 25, we find these four prime factors for problem solving. And it's the attitude or atmosphere that we take in spiritual work in solving problems. And the first, and I just talk about it in generality as one would in introductory class, you can fill in the details by looking it up in the book. First of all, one chooses the right guiding principle. In a science, and certainly in the world today, where science becomes the savior, not so much religious attitudes, but we begin to see that in order to solve a problem, we have to choose the right guiding principle in our life. That's the first method of problem solving. Well, there's a lot of guiding principles we could say I have. If we aren't looking to the spiritual, I have the guiding principle of my education. I could have the guiding principle of my common sense. I can have the guiding principle of my wife. She always knows what to tell me what to do, and she seems to do pretty good about figuring out how my life should go. Or I have the guiding principle of myself. I have the guiding principle maybe of my boss. I have the guiding principle maybe of a good advice column in the newspaper every day. You see, guiding principles can mean something to everyone. But we all seem to choose some kind of guiding principle which we think is right. Then as a point two, we always seem to trust the problem-solving power of this guiding principle. In other words, we have at least a little bit of humility within us that we submit to this problem solver, whatever we define it as. And then, as a point three, as an outcome, we more or less obey it. We act in accordance with what this guiding principle has said. Now, in Christian Science, we are interested not in our common sense or what the wife or husband tells us or what the education tells us or the advice column in the paper tells us. We're interested in understanding the guiding principle, which is the principle, capital principle, of being God itself. And we want to understand that principle, God, to be our guiding principle of life. Now, it isn't only the spiritual scientists who see we have to turn to some central order, to some guiding principle. But I think Werner Heisenberg said it really quite nicely in his book Physics and Beyond on page 214, when he was struggling with this guiding principle and just what it is, why man always somehow turns to guiding principles. He says, the problem of values is nothing but the problem of our acts, goals, and morals. It concerns a compass by which we must steer our ship if we are to set a true course through life. The compass itself has been given different names by various religions and philosophies. Happiness, the will of God, the meaning of life, to mention just a few. The differences in the names reflect profound differences in the awareness of different human groups. I have no wish to belittle these differences, but I have the clear impression that all such formulations try to express man's relatedness to a central order. In a nutshell, he's saying we're all struggling with somehow, he says, our big central problem is how we can relate ourselves to some central order, to some guiding principle. And we all have some compass by which we are learning how to steer our life in order to relate somehow to a central order. Now, Mary Baker Eddy in her prose works in Miscellany on page 226 shows how Christian Science defines this central order called God. She says, what are termed in common speech the principle of harmonious vibration, the principle of conservation of number in geometry, the principle of the inclined plane in mechanics, and so forth, are but an effect of one universal cause, an emanation of the one divine intelligent principle, and that's capitalized, that holds the earth in its orbit by evolved spiritual power, that commands the waves and the wind, that marks the sparrow's fall, and governs all, from the infinitesimal to the infinite, namely God. Withdraw God or the divine principle from man and the universe, and man and the universe would no longer exist. But annihilate matter, and man and the universe would remain the forever fact, the spiritual substance of things hoped for, and the evidence of the immortality of man and the cosmos is sustained by the intelligent divine principle, which he calls love. Beloved students, in this you learn to hallow his name even as you value his all power, all presence, all capital science, and depend on him for your existence. Now, when Mrs. Eddy put such accentuation on God, principle, as governing man, as the central order behind our life, we would say, well, what does principle mean? How do we define the term principle? Just like the term God, the term principle is empty or without any substance until defined. So Mrs. Eddy defined God as principle, capital P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E. But what does principle mean? Again, it's a term which is empty until defined. So if we look up just in the dictionary and see how one defines this term principle, P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E, we see that a principle is defined according to Webster as a fundamental truth. Well, fundamental is something that is very basic, isn't it? Principle, God, is the fundamental, basic truth of the universe. But here comes the big point. Principle God is a comprehensive law or doctrine from which others are derived or on which others are founded, a general truth. So she defined God as principle, and principle is defined as a comprehensive law. What does that do to our mythological concept that God is an anthropomorphic deity, a white-haired gentleman sitting in the sky with a family around him and a host of angels? One could visualize Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel. It does something to that. It shatters it. It's revolutionary. And at the time Mrs. Eddy presented Christian Science, it's Christian Science. It's not a religion. That's why we call it the science of Christian Science. That this is a revolutionary, even in the world today. That's why I say the world is going through a political, social, economic revolution. Wait until the big spiritual revolution comes on. When anthropomorphic concepts of deity are challenged with the concepts of a science, which would look at God as a principle and not as a person. That's revolutionary. And it would look as God as the comprehensive law of the universe, which includes all other laws. That's why the talk is entitled Theocracy, Government Under the Mediate Direction of the Laws of God, because the laws are God. So theocracy is government under the immediate direction of the law of God, which includes all other laws. Now, when one has a principle or a law in order to define God, it certainly changes the way we approach God. If God is considered to be anthropomorphic or human-like, we would approach that God probably by long beseeching prayers, trying to say, oh God, please help me, crying out loudly to get its attention, because think of all the people that must be trying to get God's attention. So we'd have to loudly try to get a hold of God, the audible prayers, or as loud as we could in our silent prayers. Oh, some people who believe in anthropomorphic God would do rituals, dances in front of the God. Sacrifices, we know, either animal or human, have been done because of the anthropomorphic concept of God. Even today, monetary situations have been sacrificed to give all to the anthropomorphic concept of God. So God thinks we're really good people because God's looking at us and sees how much we put into the till at church every Sunday. There's so many practices we would do if God was anthropomorphic. But in Christian Science, as Mrs. Eddy defines God as through its scientific meaning, as a comprehensive law, then our approach to a law is different. Our approach to a law is always then through science and the method of science and through understanding, to understand those laws. We don't have to do rituals through those laws. We've got to understand what those laws are in order to enable us to get ourselves out of the way and let the laws happen. The laws happen regardless of whether we understand them or not. See, that's where Mrs. Eddy said, from the infinite one in Christian Science comes one principle and its idea. And with this infinitude comes spiritual rules, laws, and their demonstration. The laws are happening, taking the world from the physical to the moral to the spiritual, in spite of whether the world understands that it's the laws of God or not happening. But in order to understand those laws, it's the understanding of the laws that enable us to get ourselves out of the way and get the humility of, I shall not want. It is not my will, but thine be done. Therefore, in defining then this term science, we see then that An understanding of principle God must be based on science, Mrs. Eddy says. With a capital S, that science includes all the sciences. A science of God which includes all the other principles. A principle which includes all principles, as she said, the principle of harmonious vibrations, the principle of inclined plane, all included within the one principle, or all the sciences included within this one science of God. If we look at a definition, let's take the Funk and Wagnall definition. First, this definition tells us what science is not. Then it's going to tell us what science is. First of all, science is not knowledge of a single fact not known as related to any other, or of many facts not known as having any mutual relations or as comprehended under general law, does not reach the meaning of science. Therefore, single facts or many facts which are not related under any general law is not within the domain of a science. We ask, what is within the domain of a science? Science is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in a system. So the method of science is to take knowledge, to differentiate that knowledge, to put that knowledge into order. And when you have knowledge in order, and when that order is invariable and it never changes, it becomes a law, because law is an invariable order. And when you, and that law then becomes a science when that law is reduced and embodied within a system of laws, you have science. So a key to a science really is always to reduce a subject to its basic constituents and then put them all together again to have your subject. So a science always reduces a subject to its simplicity through the law of analysis, but it also takes that subject back together through the process of synthesis. So the key to the science of God is then to be able, through the method of science, a process of analysis, to reduce principle God to simplicity, to a few fundamental yet comprehensive laws and categories that are embodied within a dynamic system and which underlie all being and solve all problems. So what we will see then is that we are studying the science of being, which will take that subject of God and through the process of analysis find out what the laws of God are, what is the system of laws governing the universe, and to see how those system of laws are solving all problems, not only universal problems, but collective problems on Earth and also individual problems.